Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we're discussing Italian crime drama Dogman, as well as hearing from the film's writer and director, Matteo Garrone. I'm Sam Howlett, and Dogman gets its title from our lead character who earns his money by grooming dogs. And we're joined by a man today who earns his money by grooming large bodies of coastal water. It's Alistair Bay, man.
Hello.
Okay.
We're also joined by two people whose surnames don't work with this joke. Stephen Ryder and Kelly Pearl.
Hello.
I thought so hard on the train about what I could do with you two. Ride man.
I felt like it was coming, so I'm surprised.
I was surprised. I thought everyone was going to get one.
I thought about it, but I mean, yeah. If Ride Man, what would you...
No, do you know what? We know who the true valued podcast contributors are here, the one that get big names. Let's just forget about it.
So after making a name for himself with the gangster flick Gomorra, Garrone changed his course with the fantasy anthology Tale of Tales, and this week he returns to the underground crime world of Italy with Dogman, which stars Marcello Fonte as a gentle dog groomer who becomes involved with a violent boxer who terrorizes the local neighborhood. Before we hear from writer-director Matteo Garrone, guys, what's your background with Matteo Garrone, and what were your initial thoughts after seeing Dogman for the first time?
I mean, as I brought to him, like, obviously through Gomorra, because that was like the darling of cinema, like, for a few years. Mm-hmm. But then when I approached Tale of Tales, I was like, what's this? I didn't know it was directed by Garrone when I first went to see it. And then at the end, I saw directed by Matteo Garrone. And then I went back and watched Reality. So I've kind of done it in a weird order. Mm-hmm. I always seem to do directors in a weird order. I don't know why this happens. But yeah, I really appreciate him. I've got a fond love for Italian neorealism, so any director that goes to approach Italian film in that kind of classical sensibility, I'm always on board for.
Yeah, I'd say the same. I mean, I've only seen Gomorra by Garrone before, but you can tell with him that he's certainly got a really good visual sense. He's a really kind of accomplished filmmaker, and when he does release a new film, you feel like if he gets the narrative right and the narrative suits him as a filmmaker, then it's really gonna look good at the very least. And I think with Dogman, he's managed to marry the two really, really well. So
this is the first one I've seen of his.
And what was your initial thought?
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was very, very beautifully shot film. I really loved the grade. Strong, very strong story.
All right. So, Alistair, you had the pleasure to sit down with Matteo a few weeks ago.
Did
you want to introduce this for us?
Yeah. So this was a fun interview. It looked like he didn't understand a word I was saying when I was like talking to him, but his answers are really articulate, and it was it really went well. Ended up talking about Roma and Manchester City, but that's aside from this. So yeah.
Is he a Roma fan?
He is a Roma
fan.
Oh
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
A very, very adamant Roma fan.
Nice.
Like that as well.
Nice. Yes.
Great. Well, here is Alistair Bayman talking to Dogman director Matteo Garrone.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast, where today I'm joined by director of Dogman, Matteo Garrone. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I watched the film the other night and I was kind of very curious and wanted to talk a little bit about the setting of the film. Because it's obviously set on the outskirts of Rome, isn't it?
It's close to Naples.
Oh, Naples. Sorry.
Yes, no.
So what was it like coming to a contemporary setting after Tale of Tales?
Well, we were looking for a place that could be, in a way, a set of a sort of a modern Western, so a village, a sort of a village of frontier, a little bit metaphysic and isolated, you know, that could become a sort of metaphor of the modern society. So we went back to this place that I love because I shoot there the Embalmer in 2001 and Gomorrah in 2007. So it's a place very familiar for me. Mm-hmm. I love to shoot in this sort of studios in open space. But it was also very important for this story to have a relationship very strong between Marcello and the community of the village. Mm-hmm. So it was very important to look for a place where the community is present in the life of the main character.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Marcello, how did you go about casting him? Because here he's sensational. I wasn't aware of his work.
Well, I met Marcello by chance, by a coincidence, a tragic coincidence in a way, because the casting director went to cast a company of theater of ex-prisoner, and they were making they were working on a play in this place where Marcello is a guardian. And so is one of these actors died during the rehearsal of Ictus in the bathroom. So Marcello was always there because he was the guardian of this place. So he took the place of this actor. And so when the casting director went to meet this company of actors, there was also Marcello inside. So that's a very tragic coincidence. Yeah. But it's true that Marcello also worked before as an actor in a small role. And he made also a movie as a co-director about his life. But this was the first opportunity for him to be the leading actor of a movie. And he was a really great, very generous human, full of great ideas for me, for the script, for the story. And so I've been lucky to meet him.
I think that comes through in the film because you use a very tight camera to him, like it's always very tight to the shoulder. Was that a conscious decision when going into the shoot, or did it kind of appear with the locations and the nature of the film?
Well, I'm the cameraman of my movie, so I like to follow the actor, to be with them, to catch moments that are unpredictable. So for me, it's like a dance when I dance with the actor in the camera. So they sometimes improvise on the script, of course, and I do the same with the camera. So that's why I'm very close to them. I'm the first audience of the movie, so I try to be surprised and to catch also movement that are expressive.
I think with obviously previously working with actors such as Salma Hayek and Vincent Cassel, did you learn anything working with bigger actors that then translated to kind of a more smaller type?
Well, my approach is always the same. I ask to the actor to make a sort of a marriage between the person and the character. So I ask to the actor to be very generous and open, and to leave the character and the journey of the character, and always to talk with me about their sensation. If they feel something out of tune in the script, to talk to me, and I'm always open to go in the direction of the feeling of the actor, because the actor live the character, so they can be a very crucial test for me to see if the script that we wrote goes in the right direction or not. And with Marcello, we change the end of the movie. What was written in the script was completely going in another direction, and was natural for us when we worked together with Marcello. Was natural for us to go in another direction. So sometimes it's very important for me to shoot in sequence from the beginning of the movie, from the beginning till the end. And that's my way of work, my approach. So it doesn't matter if the actor is a star or not. It's usually when a star work with me, it's because he liked my work. So he trusts in a way.
You speak of the script, and I know you work with a team of collaborators. What was it like coming into this film and thinking of the ideas? I know it's kind of loosely based off a story, like a folk story that happened.
It's a true story, very dark, that happened a long time ago in Italy, but it was just a starting point, an inspiration, and then we reinvent in a way, in a freely way. You know, way more freedom for free, you know, so we put our imagination so the story is based on a true story, but then it became something else.
Yeah, I think with the film, but you were a painter, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that comes out, particularly in the final, as you said, that came out with a medium. Is it a medium long shot that just kind of holds on the last scene?
Well, my approach is always very visual. When I make a movie, it's very important for me to create a relationship with the character, to love my character, to love his journey in a way, also. But at the same time, it's very important for me to create a visual, you know, to have a figurative idea of the movie, and work on the light, the color, and that's of course I do this work with the people that work with me. But yes, I was a painter before, so that's one of the most important things for me when I make a movie.
Yeah, I think that really. I know Vittorio De Sica did a film called Un Peuple D.
Yes.
There's a little Jack Russell in that flick. I was wondering if there was any influences that you looked at, because the De Niro style is so pivotal to Italian film, but I don't know, I just thought Fleek and the dogs and everything like that.
Yeah, it's true that it's one of the I come from the great school of master of the Italian cinema. There are so many the genius that De Sica, Rossellini, Visconti, Fellini, and many others. So the neorealism of Rossellini and De Sica was for sure very important in my formation, on my background. And there is also probably some connection between Marcello and some character of Pasolini, also Ninetto Davoli, the characters that are still connected to a part of Italy, especially from the south, that is disappearing. So Marcello, he comes from a poor family of farmer in Calabria, and his face is ancient, is very, you know, is connected to another Italy that we are losing in a way, a part of it. So, but at the same time, Marcello is also a character that remind me to a sort of modern Buster Keaton. For me, it was a sort of a silent movie in a way, and it was very important to have a character that could be also comic in some way and dramatic in other, that can have all this you know, different color in the interpretation. And Marcello was really a sort of Buster Keaton without know to be. That's what I like it. He was not a caricature of him, but he was him in a way without have the conscience to be.
You talk about reclaiming and the old shown in old Italy. I'm wondering, with obviously I've talked about Taylor Tales, but then I know your next project's Pinocchio.
Yeah.
And then Tony Savillo is cast in that, I believe.
Not anymore. I mean, probably it's possible that we will work together on Pinocchio, but not he won't be in Geppetto for problem of period. But it's possible that he will do something else on Pinocchio, and it's I think Pinocchio is inside of all my movies, you know, from Gomorra to Reality to Dogman. There is always some aspect of. Finally, I do the movie that. I made my first storyboard of Pinocchio that was 6. So, but at the same, yes, and I still have in front of my desk because it's probably my best movie. but anyway, I know that it's a very difficult project. I know that it's crazy to do it. I'm a little bit, I'm masochistic sometimes.
You have to be
there. Yes.
The film is quite silent, obviously, but there's a big scene in the middle in the nightclub, which just brings the music out of the film. I know you went back and composed the electronic score. What was the feel of the film before that? Because I'm curious. What was the feel of the film before the music was in there?
Yeah.
Why were you not happy with it being silent? Why did you want a score?
We put just some very subtle element to the second part because I felt that in some moment we need some music invisible, transparent. So we work on this trying. It was very difficult to put the music on this movie because. It's a movie, in a way, is so pure, the character, that if you going to put a music that trying to emphasize his emotion, immediately you feel that is something forced, in a way, out of tune. So it was important to find some element, some instrument, so simple, so pure, so transparent, that can help the character in a way but without to be invadent. That's why we found this solution very simple, just in the second part. But till the end, I was really, indecided to leave. All without music, or to put just something. And at the end, I'm happy that it's really invisible.
Yeah, it's sort of, but with that simplicity, I think that comes through in the way Marcello and his daughter interact. Was that the empathy that's produced?
Yes.
Was that very self-aware? Because he lives a double life, but there's beauty in the daughter.
Yes, exactly. The dot is his life, his light. And I'm also very happy that I made this movie now because I start to write the first script of this story 12 years ago, before Gomorrah, and at that time I was not father. And I think in the relationship that Marcello have with the daughter, there is a lot of my relationship, my story with my son. And 12 years ago, I was not father at that time, so I'm happy that I made the movie now by coincidence, because I was working on Pinocchio and I had problem with the special effect. And the person that was working on the special effect, that is from England, he said that he was going to be free for work on Pinocchio in May 2018. So I said, okay, I wait for 10 months that you would be free. And I had 10 months free, and I said, okay, let's have a look to this script that is still on my table since many years. And many times I changed the script, many times, because I was changing myself. So I said, let's do it, you know, like a sort of training before to make Pinocchio. And sometimes, you know, when you make a movie with this approach, light and fresh, it became something unexpected.
Is there any, you say there's something of you and Marcello and his daughter, is there anything of you and Marcello and Simone, or is that just...
Well, when I make a movie, I immediately create a relationship very strong with the character. I understand the character. I feel part I feel part of this story. I live beside him, not on the top, but beside him. And in the good moment, in the bad moment, I live beside him. So it's very important, the human approach, the humanity. And the story of Marcello is the story of a man that loses his innocence in the relationship with the community, with the violence around him. So my approach is always humanistic in a way. So I like to follow the conflict, the human conflict, the labyrinth of the mind of this character. And I like also that this character is full of contradiction. In this way, I think it's modern. You know, I'm full of contradiction too.
Yeah, about the peacefulness that has to be positioned. I've always seen in your films there's a lot of football and sport. Are you for Roma or for Lazio?
I'm from Roma, but I'm from Rome, but this period is we start now, but the team is not playing very well, so I'm very sad.
Manchester City, a little bit in Dzeko.
Yeah, and Dzeko is up and down.
Thank you very much for your time. Good luck at Toronto and London.
Thank you very much.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I want to start kick this off then with the kind of the similarities it has to Gomorrah, which the biggest one I think is this whole, almost the takedown of the gangster film in a weird way. The fact that the gangsters here, they're not glamorized at all. They're not really funny either. They're just kind of lowlifes. They're greasy. They're kind of like shifty, and they're not cool, and they don't have very nice lives. Whereas like Godfather, Goodfellas, you know, these kind of Hollywood mafia films, there is an element of glamorization and a kind of, look how cool this is, and they get away with everything. They have these big, nice houses and these like loving families, and they all have, you know, their friends are like their brothers and all this kind of stuff. This doesn't have any of that, and Gomorrah doesn't either. This kind of almost a realistic take of the gangster flick. Did you get that from this film very much as well?
I think it's a reflection of the most important choice that Garone made for this film, actually, and that's the location, the setting. Mm. And I think that that's what separates something like Dogman visually aside from like your standard kind of gangster flick. I think what he's done choosing this kind of seaside location town, but not a nice seaside, it's awful. Mm. The sky's consistently brown or grey, and there doesn't actually seem to be any tourists there. And it kind of just, it sucks.
It's a really
horrible place. And it's kind of very low, you feel like it's very localised to this kind of square that they kind of inhabit. And I think because of that, the people that you see in the film are these kind of working class people that have never managed to escape this kind of life of like semi-poverty in a way, and layering like a gangster narrative on top of that just seems it works. It's a really smart move.
It's peculiar though the way that he plays with the setting, because as you say, there's no tourists, and thinking to Taylor Tales, because it's so hard not to get that film out of my head, the way it's kind of like a strange fantasy in terms of it becomes then a parable, just a timeless tale of almost like a Darwinist approach. So like class and species and stuff like that, so it fits really peculiarly into his like oeuvre, I think.
I think it's set in Rome, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Oh, it's Naples.
It's Naples.
I made this mistake as well, because I just
thought it was Rome. I thought it was
No, because he says in the interview, he just goes because I like talked to him obviously about locations, and he was just like, no, this is Naples. So.
I mean I've never been to Naples, but I do wonder if it's an accurate representation.
Well, I drove past quite a lot of it because when I was in Italy with my family, and I was driving, and I was quite, you know, Naples. You know, it's like kind of spoken about as this Italian sort of, you know, beautiful city, but it isn't like that when you drive into Naples. It's really huge and sprawling, and there are lots of pockets of like dilapidated buildings, and like it looks like that. So
you do feel that this is a director who is working with a location that he knows that he like has a attachment to, and I think it really shows in the way that he shoots it, kind of those wide open kind of shots, things that you don't really usually get to see in gangster films that are shot in what kind of small confined rooms a lot of the time, like you know, the opening scene of The Godfather. So it kind of is a really nice take on the genre, I think. Of course, I think it must be the first ever dog groomer we've seen at the forefront of a gangster of any film. Yeah, maybe possibly any film whatsoever.
Maybe Hotel for Dogs. So I'm sure this came up in the interview, but the fact that this is loosely based on a true story.
Yeah, which is really gratuitous to think that this actually kind of happened to a sense. But yeah, I think with Marcello Fonti, I think bringing him on board really developed the film further. Like, obviously, you know, based loosely on true events. Mm-hmm. But I think with bringing him in, and then also, as Stephen said, kind of bringing this personal attachment to a place, I think it removes it from, you know, being like a pure account of these weird events.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Marcello Fonte then, who won the Best Actor Award at Cannes for his performance as Marcello.
Well deserved, I think.
Very well deserved, yeah. It's a really odd performance. He's a really odd character.
But strangely so cinematic. You just want to watch him.
Yeah. Well, the way he looks and the way he talks and the way and the decisions he makes as well, it all fits together to make this weird... It's just this weird guy.
But so believable.
And so empathetic somehow too. Like, I wasn't sure when he first appeared on the screen. I didn't know, you know, you look at him and you don't know what kind of guy this is. Is he like a kind of sniveling, kind of underhanded kind of gangster type? Or is he you know, just a really nice guy. And it turns out he's a really nice guy. Yeah. Like, he genuinely cares for his dogs.
Yeah.
His true nature comes out, I think, when he speaks to the dogs. And that's where he's most comfortable. Yeah.
It's funny.
Bravo.
It's funny that we kind of, all we need in a film to have, like, empathy with a character is to see them be kind to a dog.
Yeah, yeah,
and then
true.
We're like, oh, I love this guy. I hope nothing happens to him. Because that's what happens to Dogman. You're immediately empathetic with him because he's so patient and so...
Yeah.
Yeah, and the way that he has time for these dogs that like are initially quite well, the opening scene I think is so emblematic of the film itself. You know, the narrative.
Still laughing at Sam's impression.
because you know, this vicious dog that he's sort of has loads of time and patience for, and he's like gentle with, and they have that moment, and then you kind of feel that that's the way that he treats Simone throughout the film, you know?
No, absolutely. But he's a face actor, isn't he? Like he's from that great tradition of like Italian filmmaking that Fellini used to work with, where he used to kind of focus a lot on faces, and somehow he used to cast the most amazing faces in his films. And I think Garrone has probably gone out and thought long and hard about what kind of face he wanted to kind of be the face of Dogman. Mm. And he chose something very strange, but it works. It gives it this kind of, as Ali was saying, this kind of like fantasy, almost like parable-like structure to it because of his character and how just strange he is. Yeah.
Has he acted in anything before?
I think just a few films.
Yeah, bits and bobs. Okay. But his like story previous to becoming an actor is quite tragic, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like went through a lot of stuff.
And really?
Yeah, which makes it more beautiful that he's like blossomed into Dogman.
Yeah, you could. I was saying to Sam yesterday that you could feel like even the character of Marcello, he's got a past, but you don't know what it is. Mm. You know, you feel like he's been abused. So he's like an abused dog almost. That's like, you know, just trying to, I don't know.
He was actually in Gangs of New York, the Scorsese film.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a picture. I don't know if you want to post it to the Twitter.
Next to Leo.
Standing with Leo when he was very, very young. Yeah, so I guess he's been working his way up to something like this for a long time.
Yeah.
And his relationship with, we've mentioned him already, Simone, is the real crux of this film.
Mm.
And Simone is this kind of... He's kind of like Jake LaMotta from Raging Bull, if Jake LaMotta was even more insane.
Yeah. And wanted to drive a red motorbike.
Yeah.
Up and down, taunting people.
They say he really missed a trick, not giving him a red motorbike. But his character's incredible, actually. Mm. The scene where you kind of... where you understand what kind of person he is. And a scene that actually like scared me a little bit as well was the scene where he just smashes up the arcade machine
with his head.
Oh my Lord,
because he just seems unstoppable.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, the guy in the shop is yelling at him to stop. Yeah. He won't do it.
Yeah. You can't reason with him either.
He's broken this machine that must have cost a lot of money. His head's dripping with blood. He's trying to drag the machine out of the thing. And the you're watching the shop owner or the arcade owner or the pub owner, he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
He knows he can't do anything, else he might die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in that moment, you're like, well, this guy has a hold over this whole place.
He terrorizes everybody. Yeah. Yeah.
And he's introduced when they tell the story that he beat up two
Romanians.
And it took 10 policemen to actually... take him down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It goes one further in the scene where he goes to get the drugs.
Mm. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you just think, like, I was fully expecting him just to, you know, just to cease being a character at that point. But then he just continually just goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And I think just simply, it's weird, it links again to Taylor Tales, like the ogre in that and the physicality that's present in that film. And then Simone here, I saw like strange links between the two.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, he almost has like superhuman strength that he's, he's like this. And you're right, like where Marcello is a face actor, this guy's physical body is so present, like the way that he frames him.
I think that I don't think Eduardo Pesci is actually getting enough credit for his performance playing off of Fonte, because I think without one of them, the other one doesn't quite work. I think that as a duo, they just really click. Not just because of the juxtaposition between their size and their personalities, but like you can feel their charisma wise.
Yeah.
Like one of them is like chatty and like you know, very, very talkative, and he's got these wild eyes, and the other one's just kind of dead and is just this huge hulking figure.
Mm.
And to see that on screen, I think, is really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one of the, I think, the most interesting things for me about the film is Marcello's character and whether he is good or whether he is opportunistic or whether he's just unlucky. So you mentioned that from the beginning, you think he's good-natured because he loves these dogs so much, and there's the scene with the popsicle.
Yeah.
Where he...
That is a really brilliant scene.
Yeah,
because,
and I think... Yeah, you're
yeah, there. you're constantly questioning throughout the whole scene what he's going to do. Mm. And then when he runs back in, the amount of suspense that's there. Because you really... Yeah, it's just a little, like... It's not a chihuahua, but it's like a mix, you know, in terms of the pedigree of it.
Yeah.
Like,
let's get that breed right.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah.
So it's such a beautiful
scene. We're gonna
pause
podcast for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Go on the Crufts or Kennel Club website.
Yeah.
But yeah, that scene's really, really touching in the way that I think Garone just shoots it like from over the shoulder and doesn't really take a while to thawing out a dog is quite a cinematic experience.
And it's really good at showing you what Marcello's character is like and what Simone's character is like, so that Simone doesn't care that he's put a dog in a freezer, won't ever think of it ever again in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Marcello has taken a lot of effort and risked a lot to go back to this house to save the dog, but also he's let Simone get away with it, and he's not told Simone off for it or anything. It's just like Simone does stuff, and Marcello is good-natured and wants everything to be okay without getting anyone in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you saw the scene where the sort of the local, I guess they're kind of gangsters, the sort of the company owners in the area say, we need to get rid of Simone.
Yeah.
We need to hire a hitman. And Marcello doesn't say a single word.
No.
Because I think in that scene he's thinking, I don't want anyone to die. Like, I don't want anyone. I don't like Simone, but he's still part of this community in a way. Like, because we haven't mentioned that Marcello is a drug dealer. Mm. He deals cocaine on the side, and that's how he can pay for his extravagant holidays with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of does it from a good place. He's not doing it out of greed at the beginning. Maybe that's another issue, but
yeah.
But I think there's something about him that he's just like, because the hit, he ends up saving Simone from the hitman at one point.
Mm.
And I think there's this part of him that is just, he's not a gangster to be a gangster. He's a gangster out of necessity.
Situational.
He doesn't want the guns, he doesn't want the murders that comes with being a gangster. He just wants just to do the right thing all the time.
It's almost like secondary that these guys are gangsters. It's almost just like that's what they got to do to sort of survive. And I think that's kind of what Marcello is trying to do, is just kind of survive and get on with it. And he just wants to be a dog groomer and live his peaceful life with his daughter. And I think,
play five-a-side.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he's built this sort of life for himself, and you kind of feel very sorry for him as the film goes on, because his life is just thrown upside down because of Simone. But yeah, I think it's a very essentialist. You can't be so essentialist with it, because like, everybody's got the capacity to be good or bad, and you know, this film I think explores that. But I think that you can kind of see the deterioration of his good nature through the film and through his relationship with Simone. And like, Simone doesn't care about the consequences, as you said, of anything that he does, whereas I think, you know, Marcello's kind of trying to run around, put out fires wherever Simone starts them.
Well,
Again, he's not totally innocent in all of it, because he does make decisions that you question.
I think it's that old kind of adage, isn't it, that like, you can stand by and watch as other people get kind of taken away, but then when people come for you, there's going to be nobody left to kind of speak up for you. Mm. And that's what happens to him, is he does stand by and he watches as people get hurt by Simone over and over again. And he even protects him over and over again to protect himself. And he is living through fear.
Yeah.
But it is a film about like, how long can you kind of stand by and do nothing for before it starts to affect you?
Mm. Yeah.
And I think that you know, we see the last kind of 10-15 minutes of this film are the consequences of kind of doing that, of like stepping back and letting somebody kind of walk all over you and walk over everyone else for a while.
And then doing it too late.
It's when you think about it in those terms, it's actually quite a sad ending.
Really sad.
It's an ending that for me is possibly a little bit too extended, but I think that's probably what Garone was going for, in the sense that he wanted you to kind of live in that moment for longer than you feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, but I think it does make you question. I mean, in those quiet bits at the end, it does make you kind of go through the film again and unravel his choices, because it is kind of his choices that got him there.
Mm.
So in the beginning, you know, he's part of this community and he's well respected and he's got a good reputation, and then all the choices or lack of choice that he makes is also a choice, I guess. Gets him to the end, and then he's totally isolated and alone.
Yeah,
and it is sad.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and he sells it great. If anything, it's worth going to see this movie just for Fonte's performance.
Yeah. And definitely the last shot is worth seeing on the big screen because you just want to revel in that moment.
Do you think the dogs are worse trained than the humans
in this film?
That's the message, I suppose, isn't it?
Who are the real dogs?
Who are the real dogs?
Exactly. Who are the real dogs?
Yeah.
Who should really be in the cage?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Dogman is out in cinemas and on Curzon Home Cinema this weekend. And in cinemas now is First Man. We spoke about it a few weeks ago. Damien Chazelle's previous film, La La Land, is also available on Curzon Home Cinema as well. Anybody have anything they want to plug?
Nope.
No.
Just enjoying the London Film Festival at the moment. Yep.
Got to be a film. Keep your eyes open. So we might be doing a London Film Festival review show that should come out this Sunday, possibly.
Nice.
We'll be talking about our favourite films from the festival, so do look out for that. You can follow all of us on Twitter, where Alistair is.
At Alistair Baben.
And Stephen is.
I don't have Twitter.
I do.
Yeah, I do.
Get Stephen on Letterboxd.
Find me on Letterboxd.
Find us all on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
Kelly, what are you on, Letterboxd or Twitter, or whichever one you want to use?
Oh, Twitter, KS_Powell.
And Letterboxd.
And Letterboxd is Kelly P. Kelly P triple E. Yeah.
You find me on Twitter at SamHowlett_1. I'm on Letterboxd, but I can't remember what my name is. I think
it might be Sam Howlett.
Yeah?
It's kind of you, isn't it?
SamHowlett_1.
I was broken.
Put a little bit of paprika on there. Just a little one at the end.
_1. Yeah. _. Thank you very much for listening, and it's goodbye from Alistair.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Stephen.
Arrivederci.
Bravo, bravo, amore. Goodbye from Kelly.
Ciao.
Goodbye from me. Thank you for listening. I'm Sam Howlett, and joining us this week is a man. Well, so Dogman gets its title from a man. I'm going to do that again.
I want to see where this is going.
I'm very nervous. I'm very, very nervous.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.